Our scripture this morning comes from Matthew chapter 3, verse 13, to chapter 4, verse 11. Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" But Jesus answered him, "Let it be so now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness." Then he consented. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased." Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." But he answered, "It is written, 'One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God.'" Then the devil took him to the holy city and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, 'He will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone.'" Jesus said to him, "Again it is written, 'Do not put the Lord your God to the test.'" Again the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to him, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, 'Worship the Lord your God and serve only him.'" Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him.
We are no strangers to the wilderness. Even those of us who can check all the boxes of privilege as we fill out any one of the millions of forms that require us to identify ourselves, revealing in some sort of neatly boxed fashion a version of our personhood to the world and how we connect with it and where we fit in, regardless of how accurate your options feel: white, black, male, female, employed, unemployed, married, single, widowed, divorced. Do you have any dependents? Have you ever been convicted of a felony? The list goes on and on. And in doing so, we are essentially trying to answer the question, who am I in this world? How do I connect to it all? But no matter who we are, we all encounter times of life, days, weeks, seasons, years, even decades, just ask the Israelites, that could be described as nothing other than being in the wilderness, a place of disorientation, loss, challenge, disillusionment, hunger, trials, and temptations. But perhaps most often overlooked, the wilderness in our lives and the wilderness experiences revealed in Scripture, from Hagar, who is cast out into the desert with very few provisions for the journey, to the Israelites who wander there for 40 years learning to trust that God will provide, to Jesus, who is led into the wilderness by the Spirit willingly to fast, to pray, to be tempted. We are confronted with the ever-present question, this deep aching, if you will, the universal human experience of asking and being asked the question, who are we? How are we connected to this world? How are we connected to each other? And how are we connected to the divine creator of it all? The wilderness always confronts us with these questions, whether we are forced there or head to the hills voluntarily, and it can be quite unsettling. Yet the wilderness knows, the wilderness holds the answer to these questions in water, earth, wind, and light. And through our wilderness journeys, through the struggles we endure while in these desolate places, and in learning to pray there as we cry out to God, learning to survive the elements, we begin to see the points of connection that hold us in place, that help us to understand and answer these questions of who we are and who God says we are and who we need to be to each other on this fragile earth. The wilderness teaches us something very different from mainstream American culture. The wilderness taught me something different. Despite the fact that I live a sort of wilderness lifestyle and there is often dirt caked under my nails, and I talk about beets and worms, and, well, that's kind of all I talk about, and feeling at home in the wilderness, it wasn't always that way. It wasn't until I was forced into the wilderness, forced to leave the place where I found my identity, my church, the place where I was fed and my thirst quenched and was told which boxes to check, and entered the wilderness. It wasn't until I learned to pray in the desert, finding real connections, finding where I connected to the world, how I was supposed to connect to community, how I connected to myself, and how I connected to the divine, that I truly began to understand Christ in the wilderness as the connecting point of it all. And there I learned to pray. Prayer is itself a connection. Prayer is about forming connections, making connections between our vulnerable human spirits and the divine. Prayer is about making connections between community members in all of life's circumstances. Prayer requires that we seek connection, and the wilderness teaches that. Our reading today told the very familiar story of Jesus' temptation in the wilderness. Now, I have always heard this story of Jesus being tempted as a commentary on being tempted by sin and the way in which Jesus models for humanity resistance to the lure of such lavish and overrated things like food, acceptance of true self, safety, and security. And I do not say this to be crass. The violent systems that drive the world from capitalism, systemic racism, to the patriarchal, heteronormative foundation that grounds it all, creates an environment so inhospitable, so unwelcoming, so threatening to so many, that to make light of the very real need of food, acceptance, safety, and security, and a place to pee, would be an injustice itself. But here we are. In 3 out of the 4 gospel accounts, we have Jesus tempted in the wilderness with these very things and then used as a reflection on how not to sin, which, don't get me wrong, sin is a big deal and is at the very root of each and every one of the systems of violence that create such inequality, poverty, and injustice in the world. Sin is indeed part of these stories, but if we re-examine these stories with a wilderness backdrop, where the elements both threaten and support life, when we re-examine these stories in the context of a wilderness experience, the ones we all face, we encounter a very different Jesus and very different temptations that move away from looking at the sin to embracing the prayers of the wilderness that require looking for the connections. And what this means in our lives as human beings, what it means in our Christian communities, and what it means as Christians in a world that poisons water and does nothing, that throws out bread that was produced in the most unsustainable ways while children go hungry and do nothing, while we push people of color, people who are homeless, people of the LGBTQIA community, people who have disabilities, women, people of the Islamic faith closer and closer to the edge in a global pursuit of power and wealth and yet do nothing? What are we missing? Why are we failing to connect the gospel message of Christ to our lives? What are we failing to learn from the wilderness? Because we have all been there. Our gospel reading today from Matthew opened with Jesus' baptism in the waters of the Jordan. Just prior to going out into the wilderness, Jesus came to John to be baptized, and we have this very vivid imagery of Jesus coming out of the water. These people did full immersion baptism quite differently from the gentle sprinkle of newborns us Presbyterians do. But nevertheless, Jesus emerges from the water and the heavens opened, And the Spirit of God descended, and a voice from the sky said, "This is my child, the beloved, with whom I am well pleased." Water is central to the wilderness journey. It is central to all our journeys. It is central to our identity and our humanity and every single box we check, no matter what they may be. It is the element that connects all living things. Did you know that there is not any living organism on earth, at least that we know of, that does not need water to survive? Water is the connecting element that allows all living things to exist. Water is life, and God chooses to incorporate the element of water into Christ's identity as God's beloved, as God does with us, not only through the sacrament of baptism, which is done in a variety of ways, none being better than the other, but connects us all through the sacred element of water, the element that holds all life together, claimed as beloved. In a world that likes to package things up in nice, tidy boxes, Christian, not Christian, male, female, black, white, nocturnal, diurnal, the element of water transcends all the living boundaries, giving life to the edges, life to the margins, life to the space in between. To Christian agnostics, to people who are intersex, to people of all colors, to all bodies, to all things that come alive during the day, to those that sing under the cover of darkness, and to all the crepuscular creatures that rock the twilight hours. Water is life. Water is the prayer of the wilderness, the connection between God and the divine's beloved, and it holds us all together. So Jesus heads off into the wilderness, and things aren't easy. The first temptation Jesus encounters is food. Jesus has been fasting for 40 days, so Jesus is certainly hungry. I can hardly manage 40 minutes without having a snack. And the tempter comes to Jesus and says, "If you are the child of God, turn these stones to loaves of bread." Jesus answers, "It is written, 'One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God.'" Now, I have seen this temptation presented as a commentary on the ways we seek to satisfy our own desires and fill our own hunger, which is indeed something to consider, but what the wilderness teaches us about bread is the deep, inseparable connection it has to all the elements. Humans cannot survive on bread alone. You could insert any food here, really, beef, corn, cabbage, beets even. Because the connection Jesus is making here is not about the actual nutrients our bodies need to survive. The point here that Jesus is making is how bread is intricately connected to all the elements and in essence connects all peoples. Consider how bread is made, what is needed. You need the earth, the soil, you need light, you need air. You need people to harvest the grains and process it. You need fire to bake the bread. You need water to make bread. And we know water is life. Water connects all people, transcends all borders. So this temptation to turn stone to bread is not a commentary on sin, but an invitation to explore the connections found in eating that bread. Consider all the ways we as people in the 21st century seek to break these connections, coming up with planting schemes that have high yield but disparage the soil, leaving it unplantable. How we insist on planting crops in climates not suitable for such plants, wasting precious elements in our pursuit to produce. Consider how we exploit those who harvest, whether by hand or by machine, in the name of wealth and saving a buck. All of these actions severing the connection Christ points to in the bread we consume, because it is not bread alone. So the sin is not in eating bread or filling our stomachs when we are hungry. It is in failing to recognize how we are connected to the earth and to one another. Perhaps only the wilderness can speak to this. When your very existence depends on being able to grow a crop, knowing the elements have not been pulled out from beneath your feet to be thrown in an American dumpster. Across the globe, 1/3 of all food goes to waste, and Americans waste enough food each day to fill the Rose Bowl stadium. But this temptation challenges us to consider who we are, Do we seek to break connections, or do we seek to pray with the wilderness, honoring the life force that binds us all together? The second temptation is perhaps the hardest to wrestle with, as it deals with how we connect with ourselves and understand and claim our own identities and beloved worth. In this passage, the tempter takes Jesus up to the pinnacle of the temple, saying to Jesus, "If you are the child of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, 'God will command their angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up so that you will not dash your foot against a stone.'" Jesus said to him, "Again, it is written, 'Do not put the Lord your God to the test.'" I have heard this particular passage to condemn so many things, from not wearing a seatbelt, to drinking and smoking, to more dehumanizing things like how a person chooses and who a person chooses to show love to. The message always being, don't test God's grace by sinning or putting yourself in unsafe situations. As a person who is forced into the wilderness, who has walked through the wilderness, forced to climb to the highest peak thinking I was better off dead, it is not a far stretch to read this passage as Jesus thinking about suicide, wrestling with their own identity as a beloved child of God in solidarity with all the people who have been forced to walk the same path. The tempter egging them on, hungry, exposed to the elements, cut off from community, the care and attention and protection that's supposed to go along with, completely isolated, disconnected, separated. Christ wrestling with their own center of identity in the wilderness. The lure of stepping off the edge is quite evident. But Christ models, standing on the edge, feet touching the earth, the wind I like to imagine kissing Christ's face as tears run down their cheeks, wrestling with feeling so utterly disconnected, embodying what way too many people have to experience. Statistics show that individuals who identify as LGBTQIA are more than twice as likely to attempt suicide as people who are not. But more startling, 2 out of 5 people who are transgender attempt suicide. That is 40%. 40% of people who are transgender have stood on the edge looking down, thinking it would be better to jump. Let that sink in. And there are so many people that society and the church has pushed to that edge. So Jesus goes there. Standing feet planted on the earth, the tempter says, "Jump. If you are a child of God, you will be saved. The alternative would be, if you aren't, death." But Christ doesn't say, "Hold up, wait, I am a beloved child of God because this and this and this. Don't you know I was baptized? I go to church. I don't swear. I take care of people. I can check this, this, and this box. These are the reasons I am a child of God. Don't ask me to step off the ledge. I swear I qualify." Christ says, "Do not put the Lord your God to the test." For most people who have been forced into the wilderness, having our identities and personhood challenged is a daily occurrence. If you are a Christian, how can you be? Insert whatever word you want here. If you are a Christian, how can you check that box? How can you be a beloved child of God and look like that? These are questions people on the margins face daily, but this passage is not addressing a sin that forced people into the wilderness or some action that we are doing that is testing God's grace or willingness to accept us. This passage is addressing the very universal experience of claiming our identity as beloved children of God in the face of disconnection, disapproval, rejection, and isolation. Jesus doesn't scream, "I am a beloved child of God," standing on the pinnacle of the temple, looking up and down, scanning the horizon. Jesus doesn't need to emphasize their own divine being, their own belovedness. The word "test" here I see as more like a qualification. Every test we take is a quantifying and qualifying of how much we think we know or how little we actually do. And this test Jesus is referring to is this desire to try and qualify our identity before God. The sin here is in not testing the Lord with how close we can come to the boundaries without crossing them, or how close we can come to the edge before we are no longer children of God. Jesus is pointing to that inseparable connection, regardless of what labels of identity we wear, that there is something that has been and always will be connecting us to God. There is no need to qualify that, no need to try to check the right boxes before the tempter. No matter who you are, you do not need to qualify that like saying, I am a beloved child of God because I am straight or male or white or queer or homeless. Because we have already been qualified through our need for water, our need for bread, and the elements needed to make it. Sometimes it's hard to see that in society. In mainstream culture that is always demanding some kind of qualification as to who you are. But yet this is how we are eternally grounded in our own divine personhood, who need water, soil, breath, and light. Jesus stands on the pinnacle and claims who they are, not by screaming into the wind, but with a gentle whisper. There is no reason to defend our belovedness, our connection to the earth, or to God in our identity as humans. Every time we drink a cup of clean water and eat a piece of warm bread, every time we stand breathless on a mountaintop, reveling in the majesty of it all, this is who we are. When our feet are planted on the earth, we are connected, grounded in our own personal identity. And sometimes we can't see that until we are in the wilderness. The last temptation Jesus faces. The devil takes Jesus up to a high place and shows Jesus all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor and says, I will give you all this if you fall down and worship me. Jesus said, it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only them. As J. Emerson Johnson would put it, Jesus, a Jewish prophet living in a backwater province of the Roman Empire, living as an unmarried and childless itinerant teacher in a society constructed on marriage and biological family, all these things Jesus didn't fit the mold for. This proposition might have seemed like a good deal, but here again, we don't see a harsh rebuttal or refusal or condemnation of the temptation at hand, but Jesus just points to God. And we have seen the presence of God popping up over and over again through the waters of baptism, through the soil that houses the seeds of grain, to the light of our souls that exists in spite of rejection, to the air that supplies oxygen to our lungs, and the breath that leaves our lips as we claim who we are on the edge. The powers of the kingdoms are no match for the power of God, made evident in the wilderness through the elements. Our identity and connection is found in relation to God and not to the kingdoms of the world that abuse, misuse, and destroy the connections that hold humanity together. And just looking at the U.S. alone, who produces more than 16% of the greenhouse gases in the world but only account for under 5% of the world's population, who has been fighting for a year to protect the waters of North Dakota from the destruction of a pipeline, to the soil erosion that is destroying farmland, to the vanishing of the bees. The earth and all the elements are feeling the effects of what happens when we fail to seek the connections of the wilderness, disconnecting ourselves from the earth and each other. The wilderness teaches, Jesus teaches, as they navigate through the temptations, that this is who we are and how we are intricately connected to one another. And we have to realize these connections in order to begin to incorporate the gospel message into our lives. Learning to pray with the elements reminds us of the life force that transcends our understanding, our orders, our hierarchies, our systems of power. Praying in the wilderness reveals a new way of thinking about our identity. I am not a bunch of checked boxes separated from the next person. I am inseparably linked to humanity through the elements that don't give a hoot about borders. Water, earth, light, and air. Water flows, the soil grows. The sun does not differentiate between who gets its warmth. And air moves in and out of our lungs, flowing out into the universe to be breathed in by the trees and returned to the next person. We are beloved children of God, rooted in the earth, baptized by water, grown by the light of the sun, and led by the Spirit. And perhaps when we realize this, we can move in ways that honor water and seek to protect streams and rivers and our humanity. And maybe then we won't have another Flint, Michigan. Perhaps we can move in ways that foster sustainable farming practices that feed more and waste less. Perhaps we can move in ways that honor the beloved light that is found in all humanity, recognizing the breath that we hold in our lungs is the same breath that Christ held in their lungs as they stood on the edge. And maybe then we will see a drop in the suicide rate among people who are transgender. As we become less focused on demanding qualifications for human identities and just focus on the connections found in the wilderness Jesus invited us to see. Let us be reminded of the importance of our connection to all that is in the earth, all that is on the earth, and that which is in our souls. This is who we are, beloved children of God, connected through the prayer of the wilderness. Amen.